Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanroll, and I'm your host, joined by Earl Hoig, head of Places, People First, and Vice President of Operations at Loft Flexible Workspace. We're going to be speaking about humanizing work, building trust, connection, and collaboration, especially in these hybrid team environments. Now, Earl is on a mission to humanize work. With over three decades of leadership experience, he helps organizations build cultures of trust, connection, and collaboration. As I mentioned, especially in these distributed and hybrid work environments, Earl brings a people-first philosophy to leadership development, as well as grounded in real-world experience, powered by proven systems used by Fortune 500 companies, including Insights Discovery and the Center for Creative Leadership. He advises leaders on how to move beyond policies and mandates and instead lead with clarity, empathy, and purpose. During his time in public sector, Earl's led workforce transformation efforts for over 40,000 employees across 425 office buildings, helping teams truly thrive through massive shifts in how and where they work. Today, he's founding member of the Global Future of Work Alliance and an advocate for well-being-centered leadership that works. Welcome, Earl.
Thank you very much, Tiagi. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So we're going to actually start off, as we normally do at the Employee Wellbeing Council, with really getting to know you as a human and centering around you. So we begin this with Proust-inspired questions. And the very first question is, which talent would you most like to have?
Ooh, Tiagi, I think this is might not make me sound that great, but I think when I thought about this, the area that I'd really like to improve on is the gift of listening. I like to lead with curiosity, and I'm generally interested in people, but I also know that my extroverted energy, my advice monster, to quote Michael Bengay-Stainer, often gets in the way. And I really admire people who are able to just quietly reflect, who are just, who listen for what's, being said and not said. And I just wish that I could get better at that, that I could do it, more, subconsciously as opposed to the conscious effort. So I think that would be the talent that I would go for.
That is a very admirable talent to have, because I think that in this world, right, of so much noise, so much digital, noise that we experience, it's so important to be present and listen, right, to folks. So that's a great talent to want to have, I think, especially as a leader.
Well, as someone who runs a company called People First, you would think I would already be a pretty good listener, and like to think I am, but it doesn't come as naturally. And I think we can always improve in that. So,
yeah, well, at least in my interactions with you, because I feel like I've known you now for like at least six months, maybe even 8 months, and in our interactions, our interactions have felt very present. Like I felt like you have been listening. So clearly you're already on the right track, but we can always get a little bit better, right? Yeah. So the next question is, if you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
This was another hard question for me. I was all over the place with this. I was everything from, maybe I want to be an eagle, soaring over the mountaintops, to Einstein or, others. But, I think I landed on, I'm wanting to come back as Peter Drucker. His leadership and his thinking has shaped so much of what I understand about leadership and organizational life, from his you know, his often quoted, you know, culture youth strategy for breakfast to, you know, managing oneself. I know that I've learned so much from his work, and I'd love to come back with even just a fraction of his insight and impact to kind of help leaders, you know, think more clearly, to think more deeply and lead more humanely. I think that would be pretty cool.
Well, you're awesome. And thank you so much for sharing that. I am not as like, I haven't read any of his books, but I feel like I should. So this is definitely going to be on my bucket list of books to read and learn more about his life and his work. So thank you for that.
Yes.
All right. Now let's get into your line of work, right? And especially because, you know, you have such a varied background in terms of helping large teams kind of navigate distributed work and hybrid work. So I've noticed you use both distributed working and hybrid working in your material. Can you explain the difference between the two?
Yeah, I think this is one of those terms that we, you know, we toss around. We use the term, you know, hybrid, remote, and distributed, you know, almost interchangeably. But I think it's important that we pause and we be honest about what is really happening. I am a big fan of distributed working. I use hybrid working, as you said, because, you know, people recognize that a little bit more. But I think that, you know, I think it's really important that we recognize that we are already distributed. That really describes, you know, what we are, whether we admit it or not. You know, even if a team is based in the same city or even in the same building, it's rare that we're physically in the same place at the same time. So it's really about, you know, recognizing that is the difference, that work is, you know, it's what we do, not where we do it. And that the term hybrid, you know, it still has kind of implies some control. It's the, you know, we'll let you be remote, you know, maybe, you know, a little bit, but distributed work really embraces that reality that work is happening everywhere. It focuses us on designing intentionally, you know, for autonomy, equity, and effectiveness, and not about nostalgia.
Yeah. I just recently read a piece around this new emerging leader that's coming up called the Human Experience Officer. And that's interesting, right? Because I think that the experience both for employees and customers is evolving, especially now with more digital realms coming into the picture, AI coming into the picture. So thank you for sharing the difference. It's important for us to kind of understand the language that we're using as well. So thank you for that. Now, in the same vein, right, of, you know, distributed and hybrid working, some of the mandates that are coming into play right now is around return to office, right? Return to office is now top of mind for a lot of leaders. What are they still getting wrong? And how do we engage people in this new era of work?
How much time do we have, Tiagi?
Exactly.
So I know, I mean, I think that, you know, really, I think what leaders are still getting wrong is they're thinking their purpose is to get people back in the office. Mm-hmm. And I've read a lot of strategic plans and none of them say, you know, we exist to fill office space. You know, I think we need to go back to, you know, why do we exist? You know, what is the impact that we're here to deliver? I go back to some literature from, you know, Elliot Jacques, Requisite Organizations, I think back in 1996. And it was that organizations exist to deliver a specific quality and quantity of results in a given amount of time with a certain, you know, set of resources. That's the work. That's the purpose. Like we, you know, people want to connect back to, you know, why does the organization exist? I think if leaders can go back to that, that people really want meaning, they don't want mandates. And so I think that's the biggest part where leaders are getting it wrong. They're focusing on the real estate costs and they're not realizing that really the salaries of their people That's where the real investment is. That's how they're going to move their organization forward, is by putting their people first.
Yeah, I think you have a really interesting perspective because you were in charge of real estate, right, for public sector for a period. So you're coming back to the point around it's not about necessarily the physical space. It's really about how do you help people do their best work? And that can come in different shapes. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that like not a lot of people are aware of the 330-300 rule of thumb. It was a term coined by JLL. And it's this idea that we spend, you know, $3 a square foot on our utilities. We spend $30 a square foot on our rent, but we spend $300 a square foot on the salaries of the people using the space. So again, I go back to, you know, we're spending, those numbers have likely changed today with inflation, but the ratios are still the same. It's just this idea that, you know, again, they, even if you don't want to put your people first because it's the right thing to do, it's also the most economical thing to do, because if you can improve the productivity of your people using the space, that's how you're going to get, you know, drive the most results.
Wow. That's such a great, like analogy to share with everyone. I didn't know that. In fact, we just recently had the chief marketing officer for JLL Work Dynamics.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So, he didn't bring that up, but there you go. I should have, if we had the conversation a week ago, then I would have been able to bring it up with him, but in any event, if we can just talk about what are some of the small but powerful ways leaders can build trust? Because you talk about the people, right? So trust is inevitably part of that equation and really creating that sense of psychological safety across hybrid teams.
Absolutely. I mean, trust is the foundation of every team, and it doesn't come from policies. It really comes from people. It comes from relationships. I have a framework that I use with teams when we're looking at rolling out or revising how we're approaching hybrid. I affectionately call it our give an F framework. Sometimes I say, don't worry, the F doesn't mean what you think, but sometimes it actually does. It means that, you know, like leaders need to care, right? It does start with that, I guess, because it's the who's the quote, Theodore Roosevelt, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so we really do need to kind of start with that leaders do need to care about their people. It's it's not a cliche, right? That, you know, take care of your people and they'll take care of your files. It's critical, and that starts with caring about them, and they'll deliver the results.
Yeah, that's such a good philosophy to live by. I think we can actually apply that across all elements of our life, including to customers, even to our customers, right? If you show folks that you care, then it's going to impact in other ways, right? And it's probably going to be a tenfold impact.
Absolutely. And yeah, and all the focus on customer experience, I think you're seeing some leading organizations, you know, realizing that if they focus on employee experience, if they put the emphasis on their team, that their team will take care of the customers. And so absolutely, it has that follow-on effect.
You got it. So you mentioned earlier about your given F framework, right? Originally, I was like, oh, what does that F stand for? So how do you think, how does it help teams work with more clarity, trust, and intention in a hybrid work? Can you share a little bit more about the framework?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe it's a little cheeky. I'm not sure whether it's good branding.
No, it's good because it gives you like, it's like it piques your curiosity.
Yeah. And I mean, I think so. And I think in terms of, you know, each of the pillars is really, you know, it's an element for leading effective teams. So the work that I do on hybrid has a little bit of a bent to it. But, you know, I think that, you know, managing a hybrid team is, you know, just ups the ante in terms of the key leadership competencies that you should have for leading any team. And so the F's are really, you know, it's focus. It's focus on your purpose, and it's about accountability and deliverables. It's flexibility, but it's flexibility within a framework. It's not the wild, wild west. It's about making, you know, explicit those things that are often left implicit. It's about the foundation. It goes back to the earlier question about trust and cohesion and psychological safety. It's investing in real connection across the organization. And it's frameworks. It's how do we make decisions? It's about processes. And it's what do we measure to know how we've been successful?
That's amazing, right? And the key, again, like in this digital era that we're living in, it's that area around focus, right? It's so important because our attention is all, it's all consuming, I feel like, these days. All right. So we're talking, like, it sounds like you are promoting a lot around flexibility and autonomy for employees, right? Like that's a lot of what you speak of. But many managers may worry that offering too much freedom will lead to chaos and, right, create a bit of a Wild West dynamic. What does this look like in practice, and how can leaders release control without losing clarity and accountability?
I go back to it's flexibility within a framework. And I like the work by Julian Barling and his new book, A Brave New Workplace. And he focuses on one of the key elements around autonomy. And, you know, the research shows that employees don't need total freedom. They're not asking for choice over everything, but they are asking for, you know, some opportunity for that autonomy, some meaningful choice within clear boundaries. So it's not the wild, wild west. You're not giving up control. The autonomy allows you to get that discretionary effort from your employees where, you know, that space where, you know, what's the expression that, you know, we pay for, you know, your backs and hands, but employees have to volunteer their, you know, their hearts and their minds. So if we want that discretionary effort, we need to give them some autonomy over things. And it's that shift from, you know, from control and compromise on the parts of employees. But I think it's within a framework.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. I always liken it to, you have to get clear on what the deliverables are, even for the week, right? Like I always think, have a little bit of an idea, you know, where both are level setting on both fronts as to what the expectations are and maybe what are the roadblocks that perhaps leaders need to help address. But as long as you get clear on kind of the goals, like the strategic goals for the year, for the quarter, for the week, right? And then make sure that folks have the ability to execute on those goals, then I personally don't see what the problem is where you do the work, right, necessarily. Clearly, I think proximity matters in some instances for connection, but it doesn't necessarily impede the work being done effectively. So, let's talk a little bit more about that concept, right, of being in the same room. So collaboration is evolving. So what does that look like today, and how do leaders play a role in making this happen?
So I am a big believer that magic does happen when we are in person, and I really do wish that real estate budgets could be redistributed so that they could be invested in all hands meetings. It's never that clear in an organization or most organizations. You've got the silos up around those budgets, but it really is like, I believe that magic can happen in those casual collisions, but serendipity is not a strategy, right? You need to be intentional. Like there needs to be purposeful presence. People need to be able to kind of plan how they're going to be spending their in-office time. And it's about, you know, when you are in the office and you've got that in-person time, making sure that you're intentional about your calendar, that you're not booking yourself completely on MS Teams or Zoom calls, but you're leaving white space where you're getting up and maybe you're choosing to have the, you know, the bad coffee that is in the all staff room or the cafeteria, as opposed to going out to the, you know, the best, you know, coffee shop, because you might bump into your colleague and have those kind of casual collisions. It's also about the liminal space. So this is the idea that, you know, it's the transition between, you know, meetings or activities. So when we're waiting in line for lunch, and we start up a conversation, it's about the transition time from the end of a meeting to moving on to the next meeting, and just seizing those opportunities, taking advantage of those. I think if we can get a little bit better about, again, just being intentional about our presence, we'll get a lot more value out of our in-person time.
Yeah. I think these days, though, it's becoming increasingly difficult, right? Because to your point, you mentioned it earlier about Teams and Zoom calls, right? There's a lot more of these back-to-back-to-back digital meetings. And you're right. A lot of the conversations I've been having with leaders, I think they're starting to recognize, like, we do need to have a form of slack in the day, a little bit of slack, right? That you kind of almost intentionally need to put in, so that you have opportunities to take a break and actually maybe connect with folks. But really, really good points. Now, we talked a little bit about, you know, clarity, not necessarily control, as kind of the real driver for hybrid leadership. How can teams create shared agreements or charters that work, especially across locations or even time zones for that matter?
So, again, I think it's about, you know, starting with clarity about our purpose, you know, realizing that we can define the direction that we all want to go in. The idea that, you know, that we all need to be, have a strict kind of policy that applies from the top down is really challenging. I think you need to think about, you know, these team agreements in the context of the individual teams, and being able to give flexibility to the managers to implement an approach that is not one size fits all, you know, one size misfits all. And so I think if we can provide the opportunity where, you know, managers and individual teams know what the direction is that they're heading, there's clarity around the principles, but then the practices can be implemented in individual team charters that can be unique to that team and customized so that people know the direction they're going in, but they have some flexibility and autonomy to be able to shape that.
Yeah, that's so good. It's almost like, you know, putting like the outlines or like the guardrails, but like letting people be adults and having that flexibility to make certain decisions, right? It just makes... I think that's really also part of the dance right now that's happening in the workspace, right? Is having some autonomy and still getting the right results for the organization. I'm actually going to veer off course a little bit from that, this very last question, to ask a little bit about Loft, because, you know, I recently got a chance to hear from Connie Noonan Hadley, who is a researcher around workplace loneliness. And she spoke about third spaces. And I thought that was so interesting. And actually, when I came across that that episode, I thought, oh, wow, you know, this is something that I'd love to ask Earl about. So you are now leading for Loft, right? You're working in some capacity with Loft. How do you think that third spaces are also contributing to flexibility?
So, as you mentioned, Tiagi, I used to be the head of corporate real estate for the second largest user of office space in the government of Canada. I have been a fan of co-working spaces as an option to add to our real estate portfolio since, I don't know, 2019, I think, when I first saw, you know, Adam Newman on the front cover of Forbes. Now, WeWork may not. They're still going.
Yeah, they're still around, but yeah. They're not the only game in town, right? When it comes to co-working spaces, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that co-working is a solution that that every organization should have in their real estate portfolio. As you mentioned, in terms of just for independent workers that are kind of working on their own to be able to have a touchdown space, but also like this opportunity for organizations to be adding this to their portfolio, where they're providing options for people to go to a location. They can work with colleagues that are in that neighborhood. They can form connections and with others in their organization that may live in similar communities. Loft, their co-working model, I love that, in terms of their focus is on building smaller footprint spaces, but closer to the community. So this also creates that opportunity for work-life freedom. It's really about being able to be closer to your community. So at the end of your workday, you have not a long commute. You're able to kind of give back to your community, whether that's to, your volunteer organization, you're contributing to, coaching your kids' sports teams, whatever that might be for you. It allows that broader connection within the community as well. And so, I can go on and on about, the neuroscience and the importance of having, the difference of breaking from the familiar, getting out of your home office and working in a third space. There's a lot of value to that. So the other part of a co-working space that I'd like to mention too is that most of the co-working spaces are designed according to activity-based working principles. And ABW means something to a workplace strategist, but might not be evident to everyone else. But all this means is that it's really about designing and providing a variety of spaces for the activities that an employee needs to do on a given day. So it's about providing heads down spaces. It's about providing collaborative spaces and interactive zones and the transition between those zones. And going back again to, my comments about the focus needs to be on the productivity of your employees, right? Focusing on the quality of the space that you're providing them. Co-working spaces are modern, they're accessible. And so again, if an organization is not looking at them as part of their corporate real estate portfolio, they're missing out on a huge leverage opportunity for providing quality space for their employees to deliver on their mandate.
I really like that. And I love how you're explaining how co-working spaces really can augment, the real estate portfolio for an organization. And ultimately, the way I see it is it's around flexibility, right? Like understanding the dynamics, like different employees are going to have different reasons for wanting that extra flexibility. And providing that is, to me, it's like a work perk, right? So this is really good. Like, and it's just a new way of thinking about how we address work and where work happens. Doesn't necessarily have to happen at home. It doesn't necessarily have to happen in the office. It could also happen in these third spaces. Okay, so thank you so much, Earl. Like we're coming towards the tail end of our conversation, and I want you to rewind time at this point and really think about your 20-something self, your early 20s. What piece of wisdom would you share with yourself if you could roll back time?
Oof. Oh, there's so many battle scars, Jaggy. So many wrong turns, lessons learned. Where to start? I don't know that I would change those. I mean, those wrong turns have kind of helped me. They helped shape the leader, that I am. But I think the big one, I guess, if I were to give some advice, and this is probably especially pertinent as a father of some adult children in their 20s, is you know, progress over perfection, I guess. I think that's the one that comes to mind is just, you know, I used to think that I had to get everything right. Maybe I'm a recovering perfectionist. I don't know. But I think that it's really just about iteration. It's about, you know, trying some stuff, figuring out what works and what doesn't work. And just continuing to kind of move forward, continuing to kind of learn, being open and curious. And yeah, so I guess that would probably be the biggest one is, progress over perfection.
Progress over perfection. And what I heard there also is around curiosity, right? So staying curious and being open to things. And it sure doesn't sound like you've made a lot of wrong turns, because it sounds like you had a fantastic career, right, in public sector. And now you're like retired, but still dabbling in things that really interest you. So I see that as a very rich life. And it's not over yet.
It definitely is not. And I've avoided using the term retirement. A good colleague of mine, Helen Morley, I'll give her credit for her term, preferment. Yeah. I'm in preferment, Jaggy. I get to do prefer, which is really work with leaders and help them get better at leading their team. So,
amazing. That's such a great way of phrasing it. I love it. On behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, Earl, thank you for your time today. We appreciate this conversation. This was fantastic.
You are most welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.